Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and I'm reading today from Hearts of Fire, a book put out by the Voice of the Martyrs. This particular book is an interesting one in that it is all about women who have suffered for the Lord. We argue too much today, I suppose, about what women are allowed to do and not allowed to do in the church, and I'm about as conservative as they come when it comes to that issue. But here are a bunch of women who we don't debate about their courage, their faith, their place of ministry in the church. It's so obvious. Sabina Wurmbrand, the wife of Richard Wurmbrand, is one of these women. Let's talk about her. This is the third section that we'll talk about. It's entitled The Knock at the Door to begin with. We've covered several different sections, not actual chapters, but this section is called The Knock at the Door. Sabina took comfort in knowing that if Richard died, they would meet again in the next life. Now, Richard, for those who haven't been with us here, her husband has been put in prison. She's not sure exactly where he is, what's going on. But she gets news about him, and she's hopeful that he's still alive. But anyway, they had agreed to wait for each other at one of the 12 gates of heaven, the Benjamin Gate. Jesus had made a similar appointment with the disciples to meet them in Galilee after his death, and he had kept it. But it wasn't the next life that concerned Sabina now. It was the pounding at her door at 5 in the morning. Sabina had worked late the previous evening, volunteering at the church and doing some visitations. Mihai was staying with friends in the country, and one of Sabina's friends was staying with her in the small apartment. The harsh voice startled both women awake as it crackled through the early morning quiet. Sabina Wurmbrand, open up. We know you're in there. Sabina made her way to the door, fearing the men outside would come crashing through at any moment. Sabina Wurmbrand, shouted the bull-necked man in charge when she opened the door. We know you're hiding weapons here. Show us where they are now. Before she could argue, they were pulling out trunks, opening cupboards, and emptying drawers onto the floor. A shelf of books crashed down, and Sabina's friend rushed to retrieve them. Never mind that, one of the men barked. Get your clothes on. The two women had to dress in front of the six men, who trampled over everything as they trashed the apartment. From time to time, they shouted out as if to encourage each other to keep up the meaningless search. So, you won't tell us where the arms are hidden? We'll tear this place apart, Sabina said quietly. The only weapon in this house is here. And she knelt down and carefully lifted her Bible from under one of the soldiers' feet. Officer Bullneck roared, You're coming with us to make a full statement. Sabina laid the Bible on the table and said, Please allow us a few moments to pray, and then I'll go with you. On the way out, Sabina snatched a package a friend had given her, a pair of socks and some underwear. They would be prized possessions where she was headed. One of the guards placed blinders on Sabina so that she couldn't see, and she was rushed out of her apartment. After a short drive, she was dragged across a parking lot, and the blinders were removed as the men shoved their new captive into a long, bare room crowded with other women. Every now and then, a name was called. Otherwise, the prisoners waited in silence. The socially rotten elements of Romania would wait for their name to be called so they could learn their fate. It was August 23, Freedom Day, or that's what the communists called it. Black bread and watery soup were served before nightfall and another day of waiting. Finally, Sabina's name was called. The blinders returned along with another drive. This time, Sabina ended up at what she later learned was the headquarters of the secret police. She was crammed into a small cell with several other women. A few days passed. Sabina was taken out of the common cell and placed in solitary confinement. Scanning the tiny room, she quickly realized what was missing, the bucket. In the short time she had been incarcerated, she had already learned that the The bucket was critical. Well, now she didn't even have that. Sabina could hear the heavy boots of the guards frequently stomping down the narrow hallway, and she wondered each time if they were coming for her. Finally, her turn came. The cell door clanged open, and the guard shouted, "Turn your back!" And the blinders went back on. "Move! Turn right, now left! Another left! Move!" A sudden fear came over Sabina as the guard quickly pushed her through what seemed like a maze. She began to wonder if the sharp turns would suddenly end at a firing squad and she would die without warning in the darkness. She tried to rein in her runaway emotions as the maze suddenly ended and the blinders were removed. She found herself standing before a tall, blonde guard about Sabina's age. "You are aware of your offense against the state, are you not, Mrs. Wormbrand?" Sabina was distracted by the officer's uncanny resemblance to a man that she had once dated in Paris. "You will now write a detailed statement about it," the man commanded, motioning toward a pen and notepad. But what should I write?" Sabina questioned. "I do not know why you brought me here." The orders continued. "Write your offense against the state." Well, Sabina took the pen offered her and wrote a few words relating that she was not aware of any offense. The officer read what she had written and angrily sent her back to her cell. As the door slammed shut again, the guard told her, "Now you will sit until you are ready to write what the lieutenant told you. If you don't, you will get the treatment." Which treatment would it be, Sabina wondered. Bullying and mockery? Humiliation? Torture? So much had been said about what Christian prisoners faced in communist prisons, she knew full well what they were capable of. Some former prisoners had even spoken of mental torture, designed to soften up the prisoner for more successful interrogation. The communists would play tape recordings of screaming voices and tell the prisoner it was the cries of his or her children as they were being tortured. How could any parent hold up to that? The next session with the lieutenant outlined the issues surrounding Richard's arrest. "Mrs. Wormbrand," he said, "your husband is accused of counter-revolutionary activities. He could be shot. His colleagues have spoken, and they support the charge against him." Sabina's heart pounded wildly. The man was lying, of course, and watching for her reaction. She tried her best to look blank as the lieutenant continued. "They may just be trying to save themselves. Perhaps they are the real counter-revolutionaries. We can't judge unless you tell us everything the people working with the mission have said. Everything. Speak out. Denounce the real counter-revolutionaries, and your husband will be set free tomorrow." Sabina was sorely tempted by the thought, but she did not trust the communists. "I know nothing," she said, matching the lieutenant's gaze. That night, nursing bruises from the guard's blows, she lay down on the small, narrow cot and felt her feet touching the end of it. "Poor Richard," she thought. "He is so tall, his feet will be hanging over the end." Well, what were they doing to him now? One moment she was ready to say anything to be safe with him again. The next moment she resolved not to give in to that temptation. Two apparently opposing wishes struggled madly within her heart. She wanted Richard to live, and she wanted him to resist. A piece of chalky white plaster had fallen from the cell wall. Sabina picked it up and drew a large cross on her dark blanket, and then she gave thanks. And in what seemed like a whispered response from the one who heard her prayer, a thought popped into her mind. 7. Sabina realized she was in cell number 7, a holy number. The number of days in the creation seemed like such a gift of encouragement that Sabina lay on the cot and sobbed. Her body remained in darkness, but her spirit rose up in imagined light that surpassed the bounds of prison. She rubbed her hands over the cross that she had drawn on her blanket, and as she fell asleep, she whispered, "We are crucified with Christ." "Get up!" Mielu, the red-faced head guard, was in the doorway early the next morning. Sabina rose and faced the wall, as she had learned to do. The blinders were roughly slipped onto her head, and again she was directed down the black maze. This time Mielu, a man much older than Sabina, grilled her for an hour. "Who did you sleep with? What did you do with them? I want to know with whom and how often. Everything!" Emotionally and physically exhausted, the weary Sabina was dumbfounded at the turn that the questioning had taken. She replied quietly, "I will not tell you what you want. The worst sexual history will not prevent a person from becoming a great saint if God wills it," she told him. "Mary Magdalene was a harlot once, but she will be revered when we have long been forgotten." Mielu grunted an obscenity and sent Sabina back to her cell. Well, during the next session, Sabina was forced to look at pictures of different people. She recognized one of them, a Russian they had secretly baptized in their home. "Do you recognize any of them?" a bald interrogator asked. Sabina knew what would happen if she gave a single name. Then the interrogator sweetened the offer. "Tell us what we want to know, and we will let you and your husband go free." The temptation was real, but so was the willingness to lay down her life for her brother. I do not recognize any of them." The bald man suspected she was lying and finally asked her what her price would be. "Every woman has a price. What's yours? Freedom? A good pastoral position for your husband? Money? Name your price." Sabina was fed up with his constant wielding of power and empty promises. His only interest was in more arrests, and Sabina would play no part in that. "I've already been bought," she exclaimed. "Jesus was tortured and died for me. Can you offer a higher price?" His face glowed red, and Sabina thought he was going to hit her. Instead, he ordered her back to her cell. Sabina was eventually placed back in a common cell. Months passed, and the cold of winter began settling in. She worried constantly about Mihai. Who was caring for him? Was he living on the streets? Was he cold, sick? Maybe the communists had taken him into custody, too. 100 doubts and anxieties pierced her heart every waking moment. In November, the prison director came to the cell where Sabina was being held. "We'll read a list of names," the director explained. "Those whose names are read must be ready to leave in 10 minutes. There was no further information. The prisoners stirred as the guard accompanying the director started calling out the names, including Sabina's. "What do you think?" Sabina whispered to a woman near her who was also gathering her things to leave. "I think we're either going to be set free or we're going to be shot," she said grimly. And that's where we have to leave it this time. We will find out next time whether she was set free or shot or something else. Thank you so much for sharing this story with me. I trust that God will speak to you about what you are to do for the persecuted church. You can always call or contact Voice of the Martyrs. They have lots of things you can do. That's thevoice@vom.org. God bless you. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon.